defeat the darkness, find the Master Sword. Nintendo's official Legend of Zelda escape room, Defenders of the Triforce, is coming soon to your city. From the creators of the original Real Escape game, Defenders of the Triforce is a massive real-life adventure game where you and your team of heroes race against the clock to claim the Master Sword and banish Ganondorf forever. Check out zelda.dorkshelf.com for dates and cities. Defenders of the Triforce by Scrap Entertainment, brought to you by Secret City Adventures. From dorkshelf.com, this is Playdead, the podcast that talks with video game developers about their thoughts and feelings about death and how they're using it in their games. I'm your host, Gabby D'Arienzo. In this week's episode, I talk with Sam Koster of Butterscotch Shenanigans about their game Crashlands, which was developed by Sam and his brothers shortly after he was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago. At this year's Game Developers Conference, also known as GDC, Sam presented a postmortem of Crashlands, focusing on how dealing with cancer and confronting his own mortality affected the development of the game. It was a heartbreaking and triumphant and also often hilarious talk that was met with a much-deserved standing ovation, and you can watch the entirety of it on GDC's YouTube channel. I'll link it in this episode's description. I had the pleasure of seeing Sam's talk while I was at GDC this year, and wanted to invite him onto the show to talk about dealing with his own death and also how death is used in other video games, and of course, his game Crashlands.
Crashlands is a survival crafting RPG without the surviving. So we based it heavily off of crafting games that we absolutely adore that tend to have pretty heavy survival elements. And then as we were developing the game, we found that in a crafting game where you're building up all these resources and such, it becomes kind of tedious to die and lose everything a lot. And so in the course of building the game, we ended up stripping out pretty much all the survival mechanics and making just this delightful crafting action RPG. And it's got a 40 to 60 hour narrative. It's got a 50,000 word story in it. And it's just a big, jolly good time. Crashlands actually was started in the midst of a little silly endless runner project that my brother and I have been working on. It was just this thing we were building to kind of leverage our existing knowledge set and not take too big of a risk and just kind of try to pay the bills a little bit. And while we were working on that game, I started getting sicker and sicker, and I started getting kind of feisty, which I'm usually a very calm, happy person. And we would have these design discussions, which normally were just these sort of hilarious long-form improv things between myself and my brother, and I started getting kind of bitey and just frustrated and a little just unusual for my own self. And then slowly but surely just got more and more tired, and had to drink more and more coffee every day, and finally came to find that I actually had stage 4B lymphoma, which is a cancer of the lymph system. And it was a super rare one, and I did not have any good chance of survival at the outset, though I did not find that out until about 6 months ago, about 2 years after the whole thing. So Crashlands as a game actually came out of this mortality check that I got, where we're working on this endless runner, just a thing to pay the bills, and then just suddenly get this reminder that you're not going to be here forever. So maybe you should quit wasting your time. And so my brother Seth and I sat down the day after my first round of chemo, and I was feeling much, much better. And we sat down and started working on that endless runner again, but I just couldn't do it. And so I prototyped just this little shitty Roomba running around a room and picking up leaves that turned into sandals, and showed it to him, and described this big, essentially Crashlands, this big crafting adventure RPG where you would just run around and it would just be this big joyous experience for a really, really long period of time, and something that we could build, a whole place that we could build together while I was going through treatment. And he of course signed up immediately. I don't know if it was just because of brotherly guilt or what, but he was at least seemed enthused. But it was by far a bigger project than anything we'd ever embarked on before that point. And in fact, we had no idea how to do probably 90% of the stuff that we were going to need to figure out how to do. So the game ended up taking about 2 years to make, and got us through all the cancer treatment and stuff. There's a lot of interesting stuff that happened during development because it was so thoroughly tied into my sickness and the treatment and our family. And, you know, I think for myself, having something that I could always work on, I think it was like, you know, we established that this project was going to be much larger than anything we'd ever worked on before. And I think that was kind of, to myself, almost like an insurance policy. Like, I'm going to be around long enough to finish this, because the doctors truthfully didn't know if I would be around within, you know, a year, 2 years or something like that. And so we embarked on this game journey that we were pretty sure was going to take, I think our initial estimate was like 6 months. And then once we got about 2 months in, it was like, okay, this is probably going to take a year. And then, you know, as we got further in, we're like, oh, this is going to take a long time. But I feel like pushing that project scope out was probably kind of a personal sort of push against not being around before it was done. And so trying to sort of set this due date on this thing that was actually past an expiration date that I was given, in an attempt to sort of swap the two in a way, and get the game done and not die and all that stuff. And so I think that it definitely helped, you know, having that sort of large project, large scale thing that was meaningful to always put time onto. And I think on top of that, you know, being in the hospital, I worked from my hospital bed or my chemo chair most days when I went in, and I just had my little laptop and a mouse, because I do all my art with a mouse. And so I would just sit there in this chair and just work on stuff. And I honestly, you know, I saw people in there. It's weird. It's like the chemo ward feels like a bus stop, because everybody's sitting in these chairs. They're all getting these drugs pumped, but most people don't talk to each other. You know, it's kind of a dark place. And a few people have family, some people don't, which is, you know, an even weirder thing to witness. And most people are just sort of numbing out. They're either sleeping or, you know, they're trying not to be there, essentially. And I think my diving into Crashlands while I was in those situations helped me sort of get away from the general psychological anguish that comes from being surrounded by and in a place where people are, you know, very uncomfortably running up against their own mortality in a lot of ways.
I asked Sam if his cancer diagnosis had an effect on Crashlands' narrative design.
Yeah, oh yeah, I think, Crashlands, you know, very, very seriously comes completely out of the cancer diagnosis. It is a, you know, large-scale creative response by a few people who are going through this thing from a variety of angles. And, you know, the story went from being, when we first were sort of, you know, kicking around ideas, from being your sort of typical tropey, like you're the only one who can save us sort of hero scenario, to being just about this person who's a delivery truck driver who's literally just trying to deliver these three packages and ends up getting sort of caught up in this nefarious world plot, and, you know, having her life threatened, basically constantly having to sort of build up all this new technology and do all this harvesting and exploration and stuff, only to do her damn job at the end of the day. And I think the overall story, the overall sort of narrative arc of this person who's just trying to do their damn job, and the world keeps on throwing, you know, these nonsense obstacles at them, that's a direct pull from what we were all experiencing just trying to get through treatment, because it interrupts everything in your life, from, you know, relationships to work to just, you know, being able to plan a good day. Sometimes you would plan to go do something, you know, maybe go to the gym for the first time in a while, and then wake up with severe bone pain or something crazy from all the drugs. So it was directly pulled from that. And on top of that, the general sort of style of it, which is full of puns, full of humor. You know, we wrote the whole thing in about, I think, 3.5 months as we were going into beta. And it's just designed to be a joyful experience, where we often talk about how our currency in the studio is actually the chuckle snort. You know, how many of those we can get someone to exhale while they're playing one of our games. So I think the whole thing is just designed to be this joyous experience, telling the story about this person who's just dealing with the general nonsense of life, I think.
The game is quite hilarious. And
thanks.
I feel like with a lot of games that we even talk about on this podcast, death is not always, but so often, just very, very explicit and very sad. And I do like that it's less ham-fisted and very, like, the game is very cheerful about it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the way we actually handle death in Crashlands evolved over time, too, where it was the case originally where when you died, you actually dropped all of your currently equipped armor and weapons and your gadgets and everything. You just dropped all your stuff. Like it was a very real sort of, you know, losing all your goods moment. And the thing is, like, just because that's what death actually is in real life, certainly doesn't mean that that's was optimal from a play experience, you know? And so after we played with it for a bit, we were like, this isn't fun. You know, it's not fun to lose everything. And so we ended up converting it such that when you die, the only thing that you lose is you drop like a random assortment of the last 10-ish items that you've picked up, which for most players is like maybe two enemies worth of components and maybe like a tree or something. And then you drop this gravestone and it becomes a marker on your map. And if you go back, you actually, the gravestone explodes, you instantly get all of your goodies back, and you get this gravestone that you get to keep and take with you. And then there's a recipe you can unlock once you have a few gravestones called a Tenacity Memorial, which is just this sort of gravestone-esque statue that you can build out of 10 of your gravestones, which each of which mark one death. And you can craft this sort of this fun monument to your deaths and your failures in the game. So we actually took quite a bit of effort to turn death in the game into this in more enjoyable user experience while still trying to keep that edge of, you know, making the game exciting using the punishment that you get from dying. We launched in January of 2016, and the response we got was incredible. I think all things considered, I mean, the game's been a huge success for us and both, you know, put us on the map in terms of the industry stuff, and then also provided the means by which we can expand and do more things with the studio. But, you know, more importantly, I think for this project in particular, was what the fan reaction was going to be. And if the game was actually going to do for anybody else what it did for us. Because this thing is supposed to stand as this monument to joy and to, in a lot of ways, you know, escape and just having a good time. And we designed it specifically so that it's just super easy to lose yourself in. And we started getting these notes from players, you know, the week of launch, like within a few days, where there were a few people who, you know, were going through their own really tough shit who just said, you know, thank you so much because I've been able to play this game for like the last 2 days straight and not think about the fact that, you know, my mother just passed away or my brother got diagnosed with cancer or I'm going through chemotherapy. We got a bunch of these notes, and the craziest thing about it was, you know, we kind of expected those from people who knew the backstory, you know, as if we had got some articles published in Polygon and Touch Arcade and elsewhere about kind of what had been going on. And most of these people had no idea that that's what had spurred on the development of the game. And so the fact that it had worked on them when they had no understanding of that background story, the fact that that was possible, I think really made all of us feel like we had really done a good thing, you know, when you can help people like that. And it felt really, really good.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. So on the flip side of it, when you were going through your treatment / when you were in the hospital, were there any games that you played that helped you out and or maybe even affected Crashlands?
Yeah, absolutely. So I played the first round of treatment. So actually I relapsed once. And so I had the first 6 months of treatment between 2013 and 14. And then going into 2015, I found a lump on the side of my chest in the shower before a vacation to Disney World, which was very surreal after that, as you could probably imagine. And came back and started salvage chemotherapy and these two big stem cell transplants. And things were actually looking really grim the second time around. So the interesting thing was that first bout with cancer honestly, it was very invigorating in a really interesting way. I didn't play games very much during the time. I played League of Legends with my one of my best friends, who he would come to the hospital and we'd just play League together. I think we ended up getting, you know, ranked gold, which I think is like top 10% of the ranked players for playing that thing so much. But beyond League of Legends, which we use kind of some rough ideas of their telegraphing and how they do the skill shots and stuff in Crashlands. Beyond that, the first round of treatment didn't actually have many game correlates to it. But the second round was so much harder because, you know, the first time something like this happens, I personally found it very easy to sort of dig out all of the good silver linings that you could find. But the second time was mainly just sort of this, like, what the fuck question, you know, how can this happen again? And then it was the question of, okay, well, what can I get out of this? And feeling like I already got everything out of this. So now it's just, you know, pure suffering at this point. And so the second time around, I definitely needed some escape. And, you know, Crashlands was pretty fully developed at the time, but I've been playing that, you know, the whole time of dev. So it couldn't be used as a sort of escape tool. So the thing I ended up slipping into, the two of them, two big ones were Dragon Age Inquisition, which I actually played for the week while I was getting my chemo dripped in before my stem cell transplant. And then I played Skyrim, which I booted up during my second transplant a few months later. And both of those games kind of helped me sort of, you know, distance myself from what was happening and take my mind off the fact that I was getting this chemo dripped in that was, you know, going to hit in a week or so and really just mess me up. And they had this nice symbolism for me personally, which is that I had this sort of recurring daydream of my cancer being this dragon figure thing. And this had showed up actually before I even got diagnosed in a really weird way. And so playing these two particular games where, for whatever reason, they were both, you know, sort of high fantasy. And so you end up killing a lot of dragons, which I feel like is just felt like a good thing to do at the time for me personally, based on the symbolism I had. So there are no dragons in Crashlands, but there is actually, so the only overt mention of cancer in the entire game comes in the second biome, which is called the Bog. And the Bog is actually a huge organism, like essentially a planetary organism, that the entire thing generates this ecosystem on top of it, these creatures and that sort of thing. And so it's kind of like the squishy, gross, you know, purpley, fatty muscle tissue stuff that makes up the whole world while you're there. And one of the side quests in the Bog is called Intensive Treatments. And you find out from the sentient race that lives on the Bog that some competing, you know, Bog equivalent has sort of risen up and is slowly sort of infecting and taking over the Bog. And it's a cancer. And so you end up having to build a special chemo wand to go like destroy little pockets of it. And then you end up fighting the sort of, you know, the sort of heart of the thing, which is this huge, disgusting boss called Tuma, which is sort of designed after Gertie in the Binding of Isaac game, which is one of my favorite games of all time.
Sam and his brothers put their experiences with cancer and mortality into Crashlands in their own hilarious and charming and also occasionally serious way. I asked Sam what other game developers can do to better reflect their own experiences with death in their games.
I guess it's very interesting and odd that so often the way that people get that sort of failure condition feedback in a video game is actually by dying. And my brother and I were actually talking about this last week because we're teaching a game dev course here in town in St. Louis. And we were, you know, going over, I think, 30 different games. And for basically all of them, you know, when the game is over, when the player dies. And it's sort of, it's become just it's the de facto way of putting a failure state into your game is literally to kill the player. And both of us are just sort of musing about how weird and fun of a sort of subcultural bit has this become, where we're in game dev. Like, if you're a game player, you have, you know, quote unquote died many, many times. And I think the one thing that I actually really enjoy about the way that game devs, you know, our peers and also just, you know, the people in the past have used death is that they've interestingly, I think, sort of appropriately taught people what the role of death is in the real world, right? Which is that it's this thing that you desperately try to avoid, but importantly, anytime you get close to it, or anytime it even happens, in the case of, you know, something like getting a terrible cancer diagnosis or being in a terrible car accident, it's always an opportunity for growth and learning. You know, I mean, you don't, the game world feels fun when you don't randomly die, which of course doesn't happen in the real world, unfortunately, all the time. And I think like that sort of constant usage of death as a tool for learning, of getting close to your immortality as a tool for learning and growing, I think is actually just a really cool way that people have naturally used death. That being said, you know, I do wonder if we could, you know, as an industry be more, you know, on the nose about it, I guess, instead of being so casual about just killing our players constantly and you know, taking some responsibility for what the secondary mechanism might be, like what we did in Crashlands, of, you know, trying to make it more fun, that you actually gain some resources that you can't gain in any other way aside from by dying in our game, turns it into a gift, you know, on top of being a punishment. And I think beyond that, you know, it's just something that I think if people take some time to think about beyond the first step of just saying, yeah, you die to fail, then I think they're doing it as best as they can. And I guess I don't know if I have any sort of larger scale, you know, feedback for handling death as a whole in the industry beyond just taking the time to genuinely think about it and see if there's a way to convert it from being a strict punishment end thing into more of the learning experience and growing experience that it can be.
I asked Sam, what's next for Butterscotch Shenanigans?
Our next project that we're working on is sort of a multiplayer hack and slash thing. And this is really exciting for us because we scaled up our team. It was just three of us who made Crashlands. You know, one person on art, one person doing game programming, and one person doing all the web and backend tools infrastructure. And now we have seven people. So we have an additional artist, we have an additional tools programmer, additional games programmer, and an admin assistant. And, you know, having the whole team together, getting the whole studio engine pumping, has been really, really fun over the last 6 months or so as we've sort of brought these people in. And the thing I'm really excited about for the next game from a, you know, technical challenge level is it will be our first multiplayer game. So right now we've been, you know, fighting with figuring out how to make the same tree explode over the network as exploded on your game end. And from a design perspective, we're taking more of a broader systems approach than we have in the past and trying not to have to make so much content, because Crashlands is extremely content heavy, and rely more on systems and player interaction. And so the thing I'm excited about, honestly, actually from a death angle, is when you're playing a game co-op, the way that a developer chooses to, you know, have death work, like, does your buddy go down when they lose their HP and then you can run over and, you know, like pump on their heart to get them back up? Do they die and then you can like carry their soul or find them in a closet like in Left 4 Dead, which is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Like I'm really excited to figure that particular bit out because it'll have such a huge effect on the play experience. But yeah, we got this next game in the works and just kind of growing the studio and figuring out how exactly to make a game with, you know, seven people now and have it mean as much as Crashlands did to us, but hopefully without, you know, having the death mechanic ourselves.
Special thanks to Sam for speaking with me on this episode. You can check out all things Crashlands by going to crashlands.net and follow Butterscotch Shenanigans on Twitter at @BScotchShenanny. If you're interested in learning more about Sam and his brother's story, you can check out the Crashlands Story Dev Diary documentary, the first episode of which is available to watch on YouTube for free. It's a 2-hour telling of their tale involving cancer, game development, brothers, and launching Crashlands, and it's really, really good. Sam and his brothers also have a podcast of their own called Coffee with Butterscotch, where the three of them, with backgrounds in psychology, molecular biology, and law/finance respectively, talk about running a studio, the development of their games, and answer questions from their listeners. You can have a listen at podcast.bscotch.net or find it wherever you get your podcasts. The music used in this episode comes from the Crashland soundtrack, which was written and composed by Fat Bard. You can check out the OST and listen to more of their music at fatbard.bandcamp.com. The Play Dead podcast is a proud member of the Dorkshelf Podcast Network. You can listen to more episodes of Play Dead and check out Dorkshelf's other podcast on dorkshelf.com. Thank you so much again for listening and supporting the Play Dead podcast. You can follow Play Dead on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr at Play Dead Cast. If you're enjoying Play Dead, please consider leaving a review or subscribing, as it greatly helps out the podcast. Thank you so much for your support.